Halloween is officially over.
Yeah, you're right.
Are you the type of person that jumps straight to Christmas after Halloween?
Nah, dude, you gotta have Thanksgiving in there. I mean, granted, it's a little smaller. There's no songs. There's not really any movies, but I think it still deserves some props.
It does deserve some props sometimes. There's some things about it, but like you need some time to put the sweater on, you know?
Yeah, you gotta loosen up your belt, hang out with the fam.
Get prepped for it. Though my favorite thing as of late that I've learned, because I work with a lot of people from around the world, a lot of my team is from the Philippines. Can you take a guess as to when they start celebrating Christmas? Just take a little guess. Pick a month. A
couple months ago?
Pick any month. A single month. Choose one.
June.
It's September. They start celebrating Christmas. It's Christmas season from September to February.
Really?
Excuse?
Why,
yes.
Why until afterwards? Why until February?
Because they leave it up. You know how some people leave their Christmas decorations up.
Dude, that tree has got to be destroyed.
You can get fake trees. You can kill the environment. You can get fake trees, factory-made trees. But I was talking to them, and I realized that my confusion was brought about when I looked on Slack and their status was a Santa Claus emoji that said, ho, ho, ho. And I'm like, okay, that's odd. It's September. And I'm like, I'm just going to leave it alone. And then we have a meeting where they explain that they start hearing Christmas songs in September and whatnot for Christmas. And I'm like, that explains, okay, I'm highly confused. So for those of you in the U.S. that start celebrating Christmas a little early, just say you're, appreciating what they have in other locations and you're observing it from that point of view. It's fine.
I don't know if that's right, though.
It is definitely odd. But that's not even the thing I actually wanted to talk about with you today. There's a confession I need to make.
All right, well, this is a safe place for you.
Okay, that's cool. So, have you played Destiny before?
Never, not even touched it.
Okay.
Downloading it, then I didn't.
This may be lost on your ears then. So, for Destiny, there are several classes that you can play. There's three, to be exact. I don't know if that counts as several. And soon, there's going to be a new expansion that comes out.
Three?
There's only three. Do you know the names of those?
I do not know.
So it's Titan. Okay.
Cool.
Do you think I play that one?
No.
Okay. There's a Hunter. Do you think I play that one?
Probably not.
There's a Warlock. Do you think I play that one?
Yeah, definitely. For sure.
That is not the one I play.
What? Why?
I actually hate them.
Well, because are they not like a standard Warlock?
No, I mean, they cast spells. They are the... you know, like kind of wizardy version of the class.
Why do you hate them then?
They have a terrible jump, man.
That's it?
Okay. The Hunter is my favorite in that class. And I didn't realize until I started playing D&D how much I love the Warlock. And now I'm just like, this makes me really sad because there's a Warlock in it, but I hate playing as them.
Because of their jump?
You don't understand. Anybody that listens to this podcast that plays Dungeons & Dragons and Destiny completely understands. The jump is terrible.
Harsh, though.
Okay, so the jump for the Titan... they have a sort of jetpack. You move forward, and there's a certain amount of propulsion that you receive, and you're guaranteed to go up. So
like
Hunter,
Anthem.
Yeah, very similar to that. But it runs out at some point, and then you go down. There's like a little arc. For the Hunter, you have a double jump or a triple jump. And now there's a different version of the jump that gives you more lateral movement, and there's a different one that gives you more height, etc. It's a literal jump. You get momentum. For the Warlock, you only go up if you were already moving up. So if you activate your jump while falling, you just fall slower. It's a fart. And you can only go up if I had just jumped previously, and then while I have upward momentum, I press the button again.
Okay.
So you'd have to see it. It literally is the essence of... and you just...
The next episode of Destiny podcast, we're going to tell you how to fix that.
And, okay, to transition, to begin, there are some other classes that I don't play at all in D&D.
Wait, hold on real quick. Hold that thought.
Okay.
Now I'm curious. So between Destiny 1 and 2, was it still the exact same three classes?
Yes.
Come on, that's lazy.
Okay, now, look, Destiny... oh, back on the Destiny podcast, Destiny 1 was supposed to be Destiny 1 for 10 years.
I did hear that. Yeah.
Yes. Activation came in and said, hey, you guys are going to make a lot more money if you re-release under another number. So they did that. Yeah. So they did that.
Destiny 2 supposed to last for 10 years now? Now they've left Activision?
Now that they've left Activision, they are effectively the new expansion that's coming out is going to be technically Destiny 3, but nobody's calling it that, and it's just an expansion of the size of that. They're going to maintain Destiny 2 for as long as they can, I assume. So, today, he is Ryan, as always.
Sorry, got me taking a sip. He's Braxton.
That is me, and this is the Dungeon Crawl. Today, we're talking about classes that I haven't touched before. One of them I probably would like, but there has been a new Unearthed Arcana.
Woo! We touched on that last week.
Yeah, we did. So you knew this was coming, but we're talking about today the monk. And the Ranger. Ranger got a new one.
You don't play monks in games ever?
I haven't, but honestly, the way I play a warlock with Hexblade, it's basically a monk, right? It's similar to it.
Yeah, sure, kind of.
I spin a stick around.
I played monk in Warcraft for a while. That gets fun.
Is it? Yeah, anytime I play anything in a game, if it has a pole arm, I'm playing it. If it does lightning damage, I'm playing it.
Nah, it's usually with your fists.
No thanks.
I don't remember. Well, a lot of monks have some.
There's Sentinel Monk. That's a popular class. I use that. Pole arm Sentinel goes brr. That's one of my favorite things, man. So today we get some dragon stuff.
Yeah, we're putting the dragon in Dungeons and Dragons. Listen to our intro.
This is the episode. That dragon, you receive your powers from them in this Unearthed Arcana. And for the Way of the Ascendant Dragon and the Drake Warden, which one sounds cooler to you?
Drake Warden.
Yeah, hands down. I was way more excited to hear about the Drake Warden here, especially because just think about, you know, How to Train Your Dragon, man. Dragon Pet. Ranger. Think about the bonds you could share. The adventures you could go on.
Yeah, Toothless.
Basically.
Could make it Toothless.
You could do that. Or you could, like, kind of cosplay Mordecai from Borderlands-ish. Well, to a certain extent, because gets kind of crazy at the end there. So, did you have any sort of expectations going into this? Because I feel like I kind of did.
Well, I'm just weirded out that this is coming out so soon to Tasha's book of Cauldron of Everything.
Yeah, I'm very confused as to why that's the case.
And it's not in there.
There's a lot not in there, though.
So are we getting, I'm curious, are we getting, first of all, I guess, and we'll get into the table of contents, I guess, leaked for Tasha's, and we'll talk about that later. But I guess we're not getting the planar book that I was theorizing on before.
Not yet, at least.
Well, some of those subclasses are in Tasha's.
Yeah.
Does this mean we might be getting a dragon-themed adventure in the future?
Now, they certainly could do a revamp of one of the ones that exist. I don't think so, because you had your guess was that we would have a planar thing at some point, and that was disproven, at least for now, because Tasha has some of those planar classes.
Well, what the hell are we doing here, man? What is this?
I don't know. They got people that create content behind the scenes at Wizards of the Coast, you know? They're just throwing things out. They're like, hey, that looks pretty good.
Just pumping things out, pumping out subclasses, seeing what sticks. Well,
I mean, there's subclasses that aren't going to be in Tasha's that we've seen.
Well, the turnaround time on some of these subclasses were much faster. Like when Artificer came out and when it was finally published was years. True. So the turnaround time between the newer subclasses and Tasha's is insane. So I could definitely see this being in something in the next 6 months.
For sure. I agree with you there. And if you think about it, there has been a break since the last Unearthed Arcana subclass 4. It's been since August. So in between time...
Has it really been that long since we did
It's been since August. For subclasses specifically. I remember looking at the date and let me just see here. I'm pretty sure it was like August 1 of the 10s. Unearthed Arcana.
It's like stuck in my memory though. Yeah, Bard and Warlock. Yeah, August 11th.
Feats was in September. And subclass part 4 was August 5th.
Feels like just yesterday I was looking at the same typeface for Unearthed Arcana.
Is it really 3 months ago? My God, time goes by. That's actually insane. But yeah, we found out about this, I think, last week. And I'm sure Ryan had an exasperated sigh. And I went, oh boy, where can you?
I'm just always more curious on what this could be in. Right, I think it's cool, more stuff to play with, more subclasses, which are always fun, more options, but more so, what is this going to go into? And I remember at the first podcast of this year, we were talking about what Wizards of the Coast was going to release this year, because they'd already kind of laid out a talking points of where they were planning on doing. And I think we've hit majority of those. There might be one more book that they haven't done, and this might be that.
They mentioned Strahd Revamped. They mentioned a source book, which turned out to be Tasha's. I don't remember what else was there, but those are the ones that definitely stood out to me. Which one of those, and if so, has the one we speculated to be a Player's Handbook 2 kind of thing come out already?
I mean, I guess that'd be Tasha's.
I think it probably is what Tasha's is, like the source book that we imagined. That was the thing I would have been the most excited about.
The source book thing might be referring to the Critical Role one.
Braun?
Wildemount.
Yeah. Wildemount. Oh, yeah, Wildemount is always how I think it's said. So yeah, I guess we have hit on everything that was speculated back then, which is a little disappointing, but considering how much I love Xanathar's Guide, Tasha's is that. So I'm excited to see what's in it, at least, especially based off of the couple of things we've seen with the leaked table of contents, which we won't be talking about for a little bit. And if we do, we will give you ample warning to get your booty out of here so you don't get spoiled. For those of you that want to
spoilers on this are a little different than like an Icewind Dale adventure path adventure module.
Yeah, I mean, if you're anything like me, if you've listened or read any of the Unearthed Arcana stuff, you know what's coming in for the Warlock. Sorry, we've seen it before. Now they may have changed a bit. They changed.
Theros also came out this year.
Theros, yeah, but I don't know I think that was prior to our little speculation thing that we mentioned before. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I feel there might be one more book that that might be in production, but I don't know.
Yeah,
I guess we'll find out.
I'm so curious. Like, now that all this has happened, and based off what they've said before, I don't think they would make a Player's Handbook 2, because that would be more like a 5.1e or 5.2e.
They're sticking to the everything, blah 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 of everything, idea.
But they're changing a lot of the core mechanics and whatnot, or at least making things more politically correct for a different kind of audience that they've discovered, which is likely a good move for them.
I wonder if they're going to change Tomb of Annihilation then, because Chult is very much kind of in the same vein as the Visitani were.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of content that comes from just a different time that doesn't represent how a lot of people feel and think currently.
Yeah,
and it will be quite the undertaking to change all of it. So I'm interested to see what they do. But for today, talking about that good dragon monk and that dragon, well, not dragon ranger, but dragon trainer ranger. I have mixed feelings about both of these.
Really?
Yes. I feel like if there was an earliest stage that we could see a subclass where they're like, okay, we can show this to the public. This is it. They got it to the stage and immediately shipped it out and didn't think
about
it.
Well, I feel like they've seen the impact that Unearthed Arcana has done, and I think they're realizing they're realizing how beautiful and how stupid the public is with early access games, that they can just pump stuff out and we'll be their beta testers. I'm sure with COVID, maybe it's harder to do that internally now as well. Same with, their books might have been pushed back. There was another one coming this year, might have been pushed back because of COVID. So
yeah,
I guess we'll, I don't know.
This one feels really raw to me. There was another subclass that we covered before that had typos and weird wording that didn't fit their nomenclature / syntax they usually follow. This one's pretty proper, except for one thing in terms of the structure of it being in line with what they've released before. But to me, it feels very like this was their first thought on it and it got popped out here for us to work on for them.
Well, let's get started in it.
Okay. All right.
Start with the lore.
The lore. Oh boy. Yeah. Okay. Do you want to take the monk? Because it's how you say it.
Monk. So the way of the Ascendant Dragoon. Monks who follow the way of the Ascendant Dragon revere the power and grandeur of dragons. They alter their own key to resonate with draconic might, channeling it to augment their prowess in battle, soar through the air, and to bolster their allies.
Now, even just right there, dude, that's three things that they couldn't do before. Before, monks were like, punch, punch, bam, bam, key points. I do things. This has said that they can fly.
Okay, that
bolster their allies?
True. They could bolstering before, but the first one they definitely could do. They could augment their prowess in battle.
Okay. I'm expecting this to have a lot involved in it right here.
So you're already in. You're buying into the whole thing.
Resonating with draconic might?
Huh?
Not sure how it's going to go, but we'll see.
So you get to choose your monastic tradition, how you unlocked the power of the dragons, and it gives you some possibilities, a D6 table. Obviously, you don't have to pick these. Some of them being, you studied at a monastery that traces its teachings back centuries or more to a single dragon's instruction. Another one says, a dragon personally took an active role in shaping an inner energy. Obviously, you could kind of go off the board and say, you know, maybe you're a dragonborn and this stuff's been passed down from generation to generation. A lot of options for this.
Yeah. Okay. I have some problem with some of these based off of a key thing. Haha. I didn't do that on purpose, I promise. But based off of a key thing that they do immediately within this third level thing.
Okay, well, we're not there. Okay, all right. Third level. All right, okay. Draconic disciple. That's all the lore stuff. Coming back from the ways of dragons, you know, maybe in your world, dragons are kind of this old thing. I mean, in my world, definitely the dragons aren't really around as much anymore.
It's scary, basically.
You kind of, their presence has been shaped upon it. And this very much is along those lines and would very easily fit into my world, at least.
Yeah.
All right. So third level here is where we get to the mechanics. Draconic Disciple. You can channel your draconic key to imbue your unarmed strikes with the essence of a dragon's breath and to use your connection with draconic creatures to magnify your presence. You gain these benefits. One, when you damage a target with an unarmed strike, which are almost all monk strikes, you can change the damage type to either acid, cold, fire, lightning, or poison.
Full stop.
Okay.
Stop right now.
What's up?
What the actual hell?
That's huge. That's great.
What the actual? Okay.
Obviously,
now,
you got to know if something is resistant or.
I know. That's the balance.
Vulnerable.
You're not always going to know. But that's insane.
Of your metagame, you might.
With each individual punch you do, you can change the damage.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, no other class can do this.
Now, there are some that allow some things that allow you to change.
That
you
easily?
Know.
Most of the time you have to pick a background and stick to it, especially for dragons.
The thing though, try and think about the amount of different monsters that are vulnerable. There are some that are resistant, so you might choose one by accident, screw it up. Mm-hmm.
I understand mechanically. I was talking with Kenneth about this, and I will concede it would suck if you picked a damage type for this class and it just wasn't, you just sucked sometimes.
So you're saying if it was like that all the time?
Well, I mean, think about the Dragonborn. They have a dragon descendant
breath type, yeah.
And they have to pick a breath type.
But this is dragons going way back, man. This is not, you're not just attached to one dragon key.
But that doesn't make sense to me. The only dragon that can do all of these damage types is Tiamat.
No, it's a lot of different dragons in like a monastic tradition here.
But even one of the backgrounds says you trace back to teachings centuries or more to a single dragon's instruction. What dragon, except for Tiamat?
What?
If you look at number 6, the description they give.
I see that, but that dragon right there is
It would have to be Tiamat. It would have to, in your world,
No. That dragon's connected to the other dragons as well. Dragons are very much kind of a spiritual being in at least in my eyes.
I don't know, man. I'm fine with breaking.
It can't be
that
Tiamat. That's a terrible dragon.
Wait, number 6. After a dream that featured a five-headed dragonborn.
Five-handed?
Really? Okay, very it's important. Still dragon imagery handed. It is still got to be
a
reference
to
Tiamat.
Tiamat's not a dragonborn, though.
But Tiamat's a dragon with five heads.
It is weird that it's five hands, though. You're not wrong.
It has. There are so few things in D&D that allow you to change your damage type like this. Almost any time you have an option to pick, you have to do it then for a certain time period. I want there to be, for this, when you damage a target with an unarmed strike, for X amount of time, you choose this damage type and cannot change until then.
But imagine if you chose one bad. That would suck.
There's that's give and take, man.
That's every hit, though.
There has to be repercussion. You can change. If you have two punches, you can go cold fire. You can do
my
little Trojan fire ice.
I feel like it's not taking into account how often monks can start hitting in later levels.
Yeah.
They get a lot of hits. You add a flurry of blows. Every single, granted, you could probably just have the player say, okay, what's going to be?
Does it work? I do cold. Does it work? I do fire. How does he look? Did he get hurt?
I'd be more so like, just choose before you attack with all these. Because if it's going to be the same, right? But if there's one of the players that wants to do, this first hit's going to be acid. Next hit's cold. This one's fire. This one's poison. This one's, then it's going to really start dragging down the game.
I just need a little bit either more explanation as to why you're able to channel so many different
dragons. Make it up yourself, man.
I just don't like it. Now,
well, that's just bullet point one.
Yeah, it's easy.
Sorry,
it's
two more.
Easy to chisel something from a full block of stone and alter it rather than like go back and try to patch it up. So I'm okay with it being overpowered at first.
Some philosophical statement right there, man.
The second I read that, I went, excuse me?
Sound like you just read something out of Plato.
I was okay. My rant is done for now.
Well, okay, so the other monastic traditions, think of like the open hand one, what they get at third level is definitely, you know, weaker than this for sure.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? This is where they could change this. So there's a open hand technique is pretty cool, but then it says specifically whenever you hit a creature with one of the attacks granted by your flurry of blows, just add something like that into the first one. So they have to use a key point first.
Mm-hmm.
They have to use a key point to then alter their attack.
Like, I get that the monk has key points and can do cool things, and they may get a little jealous of their magic compatriots.
Well, this isn't
who
even using a key point. This is just a straight attack.
I know. I'm just saying, I'm thinking they were like, okay, well, if other people can cast a shitload of spells and whatnot that do different damage types, this isn't so crazy. But it's just like, my word.
I think
key point could help.
I think a key point could definitely fix some of the issues with this.
Now, does it lock you into that damage type until you use another key point to change it? Or is it for that one punch and then it's back to normal damage type?
I think it locks you in.
Yeah, I think it locks
you in. For that, if it was a flurry of blows, it'd say the whole flurry of blows, every hit is lightning.
Yeah. This one just got me fired up. It may not be that crazy.
See,
you know?
Even in Xanathar's, I'm just double checking here, the monastic tradition of the Drunken Master, you learn how to twist whenever you use Flurry of Blows again with the level 3 ability.
Yeah.
It seems like that could be a very easy. Maybe they looked back and all the monk stuff and every single thing says Flurry of Blows and they don't want to rely on that anymore.
Well, I mean, being able to, whenever you damage a target with an unarmed strike, literally anything, you can just flip a switch and change. That is an immense control at third level of the elements and understanding of the dragons. That is insane. That's crazy.
And then you look at Way of the Sun Soul. When you take the attack action on your turn and use this special attack as part of it, you can spend one key point to make the special attack.
Yeah, I literally just wrote all caps, any?
Yeah,
question mark, exclamation
point. Spend a key point, and then for the whole, maybe even just for the whole turn, you're allowed to do this.
And the next bullet point is entirely underwhelming compared to it.
that was one bullet point. Okay, so next
God,
bullet
what's
point,
the next one?
Yeah, next one says if you can't already, you learn how to speak, read, and write. Kind of cool, whatever.
God, thank goodness. So makes maybe sense, maybe so. These dragons can explain to me why I have the power of all the dragons.
And then the last one.
That one's good. This one's insane.
If you fail a charisma or specifically saying intimidation, persuasion, but charisma, period, you can use your reaction to re-roll the check as you tap into the mighty presence of dragons. Once this feature turns a failure into success, you can't use it again until you finish a long rest. And this would require the DM to tell you that failed, which kind of, you know, depending on the game, can break the immersion.
Well, if you're a relatively adept at conveying a character's intent And it obviously seems like what they wanted to do did not happen. True. Now, this would take some advanced roleplay and really engage players, but you can still kind of facilitate the telling of a failure in-game. You could be like, okay, well, he responds to your...
Well, you definitely can, but my worry is that it'll be too late.
It's true.
And then I'll be like, okay, we got to kind of almost, not really retcon, but like say, okay, let's take a step back. I'm like, okay, let me, can I re-roll that now?
Yeah. Yeah. I get you. Okay. So yeah, I think that's really good. That's a lot in a third level thing. Like there's not a lot of other, yeah.
There's still another ability in third level.
Oh my God, you're kidding me. That's third level too? You just get like shat on. You get bathed in the poop of a dragon and you just can now do it.
Well, this one, I mean, this one at least uses your key, right?
Yeah.
Breath of the Dragon. I mean, if there's going to be a dragon class, subclass, you got to have some breath in there.
It's just silly if you're already a dragonborn for this. You just get a lot of breath.
That's a good point. This is bigger, though. This is much bigger. You can channel your ki into destructive waves of energy like the dragons you emulate. When you take the attack action on your turn, you can replace one of the attacks, with an draconic energy. In either a 20-foot cone or a 30-foot line that is 5 feet wide. Your choice. Choose a damage type again.
Bruh.
Each creature in the area, must make a saving throw against your key save, taking damage of the chosen type equal to 2 rolls of your martial arts die.
What is a martial arts die? How much is it?
That's a good question. You're asking not a monk player. Let me check in a second. At 11th level, it gets bigger. And you can use this feature, according to your proficiency modifier. Cool.
They've started to use that more. I'm glad they have multi-tiered things that you gain. A third level ability enhances at 11. It doesn't take away from your later things. And they're starting to use proficiency bonus more as well.
It is a
D4. In a very weird way. Yeah. D4. Does it grow? D4 is...
It does not.
Okay. Gotcha. So, yeah.
No, it does.
Yeah, I figured. I think it goes to a D6 after that and so on and so forth.
Yeah, it's D4 until 5th level, then it's D6, then D8, then D10.
So for this, you basically are Dragonborn, master of all 5 elements. Instantly.
Yeah, you're the Avatar.
Instantly. You're the Dragon Avatar.
No, only at level 3.
But it... That's
until then, you're still the wannabe Avatar.
Yeah, but wow.
When you think about it, it's also kind of, if you are a dragonborn, wave the ascended dragon, that's shit. It's like you're a wannabe dragon.
Yeah.
You've looked up to these guys your whole lives and you want to be it, but you're not there yet.
You want to be so hard that you can now breathe all elements, at least as far as acid, cold, fire, lightning, and poison goes, and can punch and change the element. With a flip of a switch.
You make a good point, though. So the Dragonborn Breath starts at 2d6.
Yeah.
And then goes to the 3d6, 4d6, 5d6, etc. And it is the same as this.
Yes.
Some are 5 by 30 foot, and others are 15 foot cone.
Yeah. It's... If you're playing a Dragonborn, you can already speak Draconic, and you can already breathe Fire Breath. Now, you can play whatever class you want, but you're like double stacking here. And it's like, technically it doesn't make sense because you can breathe a certain fire type because of your ancestry in terms of race.
Yeah, but the benefit to this is you can then change your breath.
You can't change your class bonus or your race bonus breath. That is always going to be that one type.
Yeah, I guess that's the...
Because what no other Dragonborn can do... Now that you're a monk of this, you're able to now channel other dragon types of breath, which could be a cultural taboo in Dragonborn world. I don't know.
I do like this. I do think that's cool. But once you start, becoming a Dragonborn, going on the way of the Senate Dragon, it kind of gets comedic.
Yeah. Don't get me wrong. I think the class is cool. I'm not sold yet as to why this works or makes sense.
Well, how about we check the 6th level ability then?
All right, let's go ahead.
Wings Unfurled.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty self-explanatory, I would imagine. When you use your Step of the Wind, which is a monk ability, you can unfurl spectral draconic wings from your back that vanish at the end of your turn.
Kind of like...
While the wings exist, you have a flying speed equal to your walking speed. Monks are pretty quick. So that's nice. That's cool. You can use this feature a number of times equal to your proficiency bonus.
Okay.
Basically, it allows you to fly.
But the wings do vanish. You might want to not be too high up in the air.
Yeah. Well,
You basically, you're standing on the ground and you unfurl your wings and you do a really good jump. And if you manage to go high enough to the point that you won't hit the ground by the time it gets back to your turn, and you still have number of times to use is equal to your proficiency bonus, you'll be fine. You really should find ground.
If you use this. It's kind of lame.
It is very lame.
Think about it, because it lasts for 6 seconds.
Yeah. It's very lame. It's a winged fart. You do a little burst and you go in the air and you go flap and boop. For some reason, what almost no dragon can do, again, they can only channel one element for the most part, except for Tiamat. But you can't channel full dragon wings for more than a 6 second burst.
I almost see, like, I feel like it'd be cooler. Granted, I don't make balancing on this. I'm not entirely sure or if this would break anything. Obviously, a higher level is pretty stupid, but the more key points you pump into it, the longer it lasts, maybe.
Okay.
Because if you can just keep using this out of combat, you could just keep using it and fly longer.
Yeah.
So I would just, if my player wants to fly, I would just ask them, how many times do you want to use this? It's almost just like pumping in key points. I want to do this, you know, I want to pump it in 10 key points. So then that's 10 steps of the wind. So that's 60 seconds. You can fly for a minute.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
But in combat, I guess it'd be a little different story.
That's a little clunky. I think this one needs to be refined a bit. Like, again, your control of the dragons in your third level ability is, like, insane. You've been training for a millennia, and you finally figure it out. And then you just, like, missed all the wing classes. And you're like, I can do it for 6 seconds.
You're only human.
That's it. I can do it for 6 seconds. You want me to punch you out with five elements? Not do that. Anything else, can't do it.
New York, man.
Next one is coolish. Yeah, sorry. Go ahead.
11th level. Aspect of the Wyrm, the worm. The power of your draconic key now radiates from you, protecting your allies from harm and punishing any who raise arms against them. This comes back to bolstering your allies.
This is so crazy.
As a bonus action, I always like having bonus actions. Mm-hmm. You can create an aura of draconic power that radiates 30 feet from you for 1 minute.
Is this a JoJo stand? Sorry.
It is?
I mean, not literally, but it basically is.
Not as much. They must love that with monks, because the other one, the...
Oh, yeah.
What was it? The ascendant?
A stand is a manifestation of your fighting spirit. So...
True.
A lot of them have short ranges like this.
So you choose the damage type again, and for the duration, you gain the following effects. You and your allies within your 30-feet aura gain resistance to the chosen damage type. So if you're getting pegged by a poison troll, and you realize pretty quick the DM's saying, you take 15 poison damage, quite a lot, pop this, and everyone's going to be taking half damage within your 30 radius. Waves of destructive energy flow out from you and your allies when any of you are attacked. When you or one of your allies in the aura is hit by an attack made by another creature within the aura, the target that was hit can use their reaction to deal an amount of damage of the chosen type equal to one roll of your martial arts die to the attacker, which at this point we have figured out is a D8.
Excuse me. Hold on. How long does this last? Can we go over that again?
Minute.
Okay. Cool. If you're getting hit by something that punches a lot, there's a lot of instances of damage going back to that guy.
True, but if you think about it, if it's a poison troll and you have done resistance to poison damage, you're giving poison damage back to them, so it's going to be taken half, correct?
Or you could think about this as, I'm going to make this a defensive ability, or I'm going to make it an offense ability. So you could be fighting that same poison troll, and you're like, poison troll is kind of weak to fire. I think we can handle the poison damage. I'm going to make my thing into fire.
That's a good point.
You could do either way.
That's smart. Now you can only use this once unless you spend 4 key points.
True. But this is like, and I get it. I try to think of these abilities more as single use or very locked in spells they get access to.
Yes, because they don't get spells.
This is their 11th level access table of spells where they get to pick one thing and only this one thing. So that's how I try to reel it back in and make more sense as to why these things are so strong. So at the 11th level, you're casting some strong spells, you know?
Yeah.
But this one has a large ceiling for opportunity here. A lot of counter abilities do, but this one in particular, I think you could do some crazy stuff with it.
Definitely.
For sure.
Once you start thinking outside the box.
Think outside the aura field. Go ahead. Bring us home.
Final. Ascendant Aspect. 17th level. Your Draconic Key has now reached its peak. You gain the following benefits. You gain blind sight out to 30 feet.
Period.
Within that range, you can effectively... I mean, if you guys know what blind sight is, more or less. If you don't, it basically lets you just see things that are around you, even if you're blinded. Are. It's basically, you're able to sense things without having to, like, it's like kind of like tremor sense, but not really.
Tremor sense, just you kind of sense things.
Yeah. Unless it's behind total cover.
Yeah.
And you can see invisible creatures.
Okay.
That's strong, but this is also important to know, this is 17th level. This is when the sorcerers and the warlocks and wizards are getting their, I guess, sorry, not warlocks, everyone else is getting their 9th level spells. So, yeah. I mean, this is their 9th level stuff, right? It makes sense. When you damage a creature with your Breath of the Dragon, the thing we touched on earlier, the energy clings to the target. At the start of each of the creature's turns, it takes damage of the type your breath dealt equal to one roll of your martial arts die. We're getting to a lot of die rolls at this level, but we already were, probably. At the end of its turn, the creature can repeat the save and then the effect on itself on a success. And finally, when you activate your aspect of the Wyrm, the last thing we covered with the aura and whatnot, Draconic Fury explodes from you. Choose any number of creatures you can see within your aura. Those creatures each take 4d10, whatever damage choice you choose of the ones we've already covered.
Couple of things.
Okay.
So just for an example of the power difference to other subclasses this has, yes, they get spells. Mm-hmm. I understand. I understand that makes it a lot more reasonable.
Because they get, I mean, this is when they're getting the wish spell.
For the Hexblade Warlock.
Dude, fuck warlocks.
You can just move. You can just move your curse to a different target if you kill your current target. Now, that comes with all the benefits you get before.
17th level?
Yeah, it's the max thing for that class. And yet you get blindsight. You explode for 4d10 of damage. And this just happens anytime you activate your aspect of Wyrm, which you can do again by spending key points.
Hold on. This is your 14th level ability, Mr. Master of Hexes.
Isn't that the end? Isn't that the last one?
It is your end, but this is at a different level.
I get it, but it's the last one.
Yeah, but at that level, people aren't getting wish spells, so it has to match.
Well, we don't get a 17th level one at all.
I know. Not every class considers things at different levels, man.
I'm just saying, some subclasses are not created equal. This is one of them.
Let's compare it to the most common Way of the Open Hand monastic tradition. Quivering Palm, 17th level. You gain the ability to set up lethal vibrations in someone's body. More or less, I'm just going to pump it down. It basically just gives, you can do 10d10 necrotic damage.
It's a little bit less than
when
this.
When you hit a creature with an unarmed strike, you can spend 3 key points to do this.
Anytime?
Kind of. It's more complicated than that, but more or less, we'll get 10d10 necrotic damage.
And you can do it a couple of times, equal to your key points, yeah? Until you run out. Just saying.
Don't quote me on it.
You get to activate your aspect of the Wyrm. You get all that stuff too. But now when you're 17th level, when you do that again, you explode and you do some other stuff and a bunch of other damage takes, and they get damage over time, which almost doesn't exist in D&D at all until Baldur's Gate 3 came out, and now it's all over the place, which isn't really 5e, so apologize on that, but this is bringing a lot of new stuff and a lot of like viability and reusability and flexibility that I want in other classes. I'm not...
Hey, they're getting started.
Oh, growing pains I am experiencing.
Wait a few more weeks.
Growing pains. This new Warlock subclass better be...
Hey, you were here from the beginning.
Yeah, I know.
Well, close enough, at least, I guess.
Oh, boy. I'm just...
Warlocks. I like the class. I think it's great.
I like it. It's just, it does so much. It's cool. It's really cool. I'm excited for monks to get access to something this fun. Okay. You ready for halftime, Ranger? Ready to go?
Yeah.
All right. So, this is kind of similar in some of its abilities, but for this, at third level, when you gain the Ranger archetype feature, you can now pick this playtest option known as the Drake Warden. Here's some lore for you.
Cool.
Drake Wardens are Rangers who use their magical connection, ooh, magic and Rangers, nice, with nature to form an enduring bond with a minor dragon, a Drake. This bond allows the Ranger to summon the Drake to their side, bring it however the hell you want in terms of flavor, and then you can have the awe-inspiring power wielded by the dragons. Some of the same imagery that they had for the monk. The super strong. Super cool.
So you're telling me this is like Beastmaster?
Basically. But for Drakes.
But
Nathan Drake.
Cooler?
Can I name my Drake Nathan?
You could. I'm
sorry. It's basically Beastmaster but cooler and actually works and makes sense. So
before we get into it though, this is going to be a prevalent issue with a lot of the ones we've talked about. It almost like overwrites the other class.
Yeah.
Why would I pick a different monk class? Why would I pick Beastmaster instead of Drake Warden? Let's talk about
this. This is why you release 5.1 edition. So people can say, I want to use the new subclasses and only those. We're going to play 5.1 because the vanilla 5e editions have a lot of weak subclasses. That's the only way to solve that issue. Like, concretely, if you want Wizards of the Coast to solve that issue, that's how they have to do it. Now, the players can take it in their own hands and say, only play these subclasses. True. It's easy.
That'll cause different problems, though, if they do that.
Yes, it will.
They don't want to splinter the fan base like that.
No, they don't. They're kind of doing that, but again, this is Unearthed Arcana. You do not have to use it.
They'll get the elitist guys. They're like, 5.1 or bust, bro. You can't play with us unless you play in 5.1.
Yeah, those people do exist. Definitely do. And hey, to each their own. If you want to be a Gen 1-er, you know, Gen 1 Pokemon's the best. That's you.
All right. Draconic Gift. Let's go.
Okay. Consider, the lore is pretty simple. The lore. How did you get the bond with your dragon? What'd you do? Did you find a little egg? You pick it up and you hatch it and it thinks you're mom?
That sounds actually problematic if you stole a Drake egg from somebody.
Yeah, don't do that. So maybe you studied a dragon scaler claw or a trinket from its hoard and created your bond to the token's lingering draconic magic. Or maybe a true dragon gave you a Drake egg. Ooh, I just said that. To care for. Why would they do that? I don't know. Sounds like a really cool backstory. When it hatched,
maybe you're just Aragon.
Yeah, you can do that. Or some other thing that you're interested in to come up with the background for your story. Maybe you're Hiccup from How to Train Your Dragon. Maybe you come from a horde of dragon training people. I don't know. So when you get into the stats and whatnot, it seems compared to what we just went through, it seems a little underwhelming. The bond you share with your Drake creates a deeper connection to dragonkind, granting you an understanding and empowering your presence. This is your draconic gift. You gain the following benefits at third level. You can now read draconic and speak it.
Cool.
You learn thaumaturgy, which is a ranger spell for you. Thanks. Love it. But at third level as well, you get another thing. Drake companion. This is the important part. You can magically summon a Drake bound to you. As an action, you can summon the Drake, which appears unoccupied space, blah, 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 within 30 feet of you. The drake is friendly to you, of course, and obeys your commands.
Yeah, drinks your bro.
See the drake companion stat block. It is in this thing. It uses your proficiency bonus in several places as well.
Yeah, when you summon, stays there for as long as you have your, like, how big your proficiency bonus is.
Which is very interesting, too. So this is a class that you really only feel if your drake is out, so use it wisely.
Yeah, but bust it out before ranger. Battle, I guess.
Yeah. So, when you summon the drake, choose a damage type listed in its dragon essence trait.
Ooh.
I'm pretty sure that...
It's the same ones.
It's the same ones, so you can just summon a dragon of any element. Now, this one makes a little more sense to me. Just a little bit. You have a connection with the dragon, and you can say, hey, I'd love an acid dragon, please.
I feel like it would make more sense, though, if you just had a drake.
Yeah, that's what I would prefer, but I think
this is
they're
more
trying...
like a spirit of a drake, or like a fey drake, kind of.
Is it? No, this is a literal drake.
I know it is, but it almost is not, because you can switch the type, so it's almost like it's a different drake every time you summon one.
Yeah. Or it's baby Tiamat.
Maybe.
There you go. I don't know. That's the only justification I can come up with this. The element changing stuff is convenient in its quality of life, but it doesn't make sense to me with the existing lore. Is it okay to bust existing lore and create new lore? Yes. But man, oh boy, it is frustrating how they implemented it, at least for now. So, of course, you can pick how the dragon looks, etc. This doesn't affect the game at all. It's just for looks and whatnot. So in combat, it shares your initiative count. They're taking a bit of Divinity Original Sin notes here. The things you summon take their turn immediately after yours. So it's an extension of you. Now, this is to try and cut down on awkward action economy and something that Ryan's talked about, at least with me before, quite frequently, how he feels summoning in 5e slows things down.
Well, Beastmaster works the same. Yeah, the sorcerer one, we have a sorcerer that can summon a beast, and then you roll an initiative for it afterwards, and it's just kind of cumbersome.
Yeah, yeah. So there's different ways. I'm glad they went with this. So it can move and use its reaction on its own, so as you see fit on its turn, or reaction at any point in the combat. But the only action it takes is dodge, unless you use, on your turn, a bonus action to command it. Now, anything that it can do from its stat block, you can command it to do, but you must use your bonus action.
What's interesting about this is the Beastmaster specifically says, on your turn, you can use your action to verbally command it.
So this is literally just better.
Yeah, it's just, you use your bonus action instead.
So I guess, like, their philosophy there, they were trying to shrink down the action economy, I assume.
Well, Beastmaster is commonly referred to as where Wizards of the Coast messed up with the Ranger.
That's
there is
really
the people have made the Beastmaster 2.0. They've made other versions of the Beastmaster that have made it better, hopefully. And this is...
Do you feel this answers to some of that?
Definitely, and I hope Tasha's has some answers to it as well. There's a section in there that might talk about it.
All right. Okay. So, if you're incapacitated, the drake can take any action of its choice, not just the dodge. Cool, cool. Once you summon the drake, you can't do so again until you finish a long rest, unless you expend a spell slot of first level or higher to summon it. It also remains there for a number of hours equal to your proficiency bonus, which when you're starting out is 2. So 2 hours, it's pretty chonky. I better prepare some encounters for that. But this class will start desiring long rests more frequently in your game, I would say. So if it dies, of course, it goes away, but you can always bring it back after you do that long rest. Anything it was wearing goes away or plops down. And then there's the stat block for that. You guys can look at it if you choose to. But for all intents and purposes, it's a drake companion, small dragon with a decent AC.
It's better as you level up.
Yeah, so it scales with you, which is amazing, wonderful. Love it. It's dragon essence thing that it was referencing here, do you think is important to mention. Choose the elements that we've mentioned previously within the monk class, and it determines its damage immunity, its damage of its bite, and the damage of its infused strikes trait. Cool. Yeah.
The cool thing, too, is this. While the Beastmaster's companion does scale with you, kind of, this scales
yes,
with you better.
It's really great.
Because the Ranger's Companion just goes by your proficiency bonus. This scales in different ways.
One of the coolest thing it can do, and the way I think about this Drake is it's basically a weapon for you. So you're getting a really cool weapon that, as a reaction, can, when another creature within 30 feet of the Drake that it can see hits with a weapon attack. Now, this means it would only be super useful either for you or other weapon-using classes in your party, so think about that. The Drake can infuse the strike with its essence or elemental damage type to allow that weapon to deal 1d6 damage of the type that it exists as. Cool. My first thought was, does it scale? I literally wrote that. And you'll find out that it does, which was I was pleasantly surprised to find out. But that's a really interesting ability. Both of these classes with their Drakes have reactionary elemental damage types based off of either attacking or getting attacked. So I thought that was cool.
Yeah, I like things happening not on your turn only.
Yeah, it's a lot more engaging.
It's Hearthstone versus Magic the Gathering.
Yeah, basically.
Interaction's good.
So as you get to level 7th, you get Bond of Fang and Scale. So the bond that you share with your Drake gets stronger, which protects you, stoking the Drake's fury. While your Drake is summoned, you and the Drake, which is interesting wording. I don't know why it says you and the Drake, because the Drake just kind of gets a lot of stuff here, especially with the 11th level. More so, I'm not sure why they said you and the Drake, but you gain these three benefits. You gain resistance to the damage type chosen for the Drake's Draconic Essence. So at level 7, you get that. Choose one of the following. This one's a bit interesting. The Drake gains a swimming speed of 40 feet and can breathe both air and water. Or the Drake grows wings and gains a flying speed of 40. Does it not have a flying speed before? No, it doesn't. Is that weird? To me, yeah. Why do you think that is?
That is weird.
It cannot fly as it's a small baby dragon, I guess.
Until
7th level. So you can either get a water dragon or you can get or a flying Drake. Very peculiar to me. But hey, you picked this here, and it stuck with that.
It's probably just to help with balancing.
Yeah, I suppose so. It does make sense.
So it's not just flying around and attacking, you know, flying creatures or moving on the battlefield too quickly.
Yeah, it just takes me a bit out of the realism sort of things. I don't know a lot of lore and anatomy about mythical drakes and if they can't fly at an early age, but this is a case of where balancing ruins realism to me a little bit. So now this is where the Drake's bite gets a bit strong. You get an extra 1d6 of that elemental type damage. So pretty cool, yeah.
Just in comparison, the Beastmaster 7th level lets you use your bonus action to command it to dash, disengage, dodge, or help, not to attack.
The Warlock subclass, I'm always going to come back to it. I know the Ranger got stinted so much, but yeah. Things like the Tome Warlock and whatnot, I think the subclass is actually your patron, so I could be incorrect here. I'm always confused on that. But like, some of these early classes for 5e, man, do nothing.
I think the Beastmaster, they need to make
a new one.
I mean, well, just get rid of the Drake and turn it into a beast, because God, it just hurts when it's that cumbersome and that useless.
Yeah. This is close to home for you, because isn't Ranger one of your favorite classes, or at least it should be?
I want it to be, yeah.
Always hate that. You're playing a game that has a lot of heroes, and you're like, I really want this character to be my favorite, because it resonates with me, but it just sucks.
Yeah.
Happens to me a lot. So 11th level, maybe gets even stronger here. Drake's Breath. As an action, you can exhale and a 30-foot cone of damaging breath or cause your Drake to exhale it. You can choose the elemental type, just like we've talked about before, and each creature in a cone must make a dex saving throw against your spell save DC, taking 6d6 on a failed save or half as much on a successful one. It increases to 8d6 at 15th level, so this is basically a strong spell that you can have access to. With a bit of utility as well. Once you use it, you can't do it again until you finish a long rest, unless you spend a spell slot of 3rd level or higher to use it. I'm liking that they're bringing spell slots for some of these classes that don't use them as much. Really cool. My question At what level do you get the breath feature for the monk?
That was 3.
Really? It's like 3, right?
Third level.
You could theoretically level to 3 for the Draconic Disciple Monk and then do this to 11 and have just a bunch of breaths and be a dragonborn. Isn't that silly?
You could.
You could, but
you can't do them all.
Yeah.
I mean, you can, but that's 3 different actions.
I just think, man, if you want to do a breath build, that's the way. I think that's hilarious. those are my thoughts.
But which breath is the strongest?
The Drake's breath at 11.
It's this one.
It's this one. This one's strong. And you can make it come from different mouths. Cool stuff. So, Perfect Bond is your 15th and, I believe, final ability that comes up. Your bond with your Drake reaches the pinnacle of its power. While your Drake is summoned...
Well, I still got 5 more levels to go.
Yeah, well, hopefully the Ranger gets something a little later or whatnot, but this is the end of the line for you. While your Drake is summoned, and I think this one's super cool, and this freaked me out, you and the Drake gain the following benefits. I think they just need to remove you. The Drake goes to large size. You don't. The Drake does. So keep that in mind.
That'd be really cool if you grew to large size.
With the wording they have, so you gain the benefit, the Drake goes to large size. This sentence just doesn't work. But the Drake is now a big boy. There's more. The Drake's bite attack gets another 1d6 damage. So it's now 2d6.
You're 15.
And when either you or the Drake takes damage when you're with... Oh, this one. I'm sorry, I gotta start again. When either you or the Drake takes damage when you're within 30 feet of each other, you can use a reaction to give yourself or the Drake resistance to that instance of damage.
So not that type, but that specific damage.
While your Drake is active for however many hours it's alive, or it is existing and has not been killed, and you're near each other, 30 feet near each other, you have resistance to every instance of damage that you choose.
Just for one.
For one reaction. Yeah.
One instance.
Every turn you can... Oh. Every turn, Ryan, you get to have resistance on one.
I mean, that's not much different than, you know, the rogue getting out of every little attack you send to them.
I just... Why don't warlock... I guess we get invocations. This can be pretty cool.
Yeah, come on, man. Don't sell yourself short. All the classes gets. I think this is showing you that there's more out there than just the warlock.
No. I only want warlock.
Every class has some cool stuff. Check it out. Well, I guess, every class now has some cool stuff.
God. I get a dragon that is now large size and can do all this cool stuff, or it could be a warlock and have a little book. It does nothing.
Ugh. You can summon an undead dude after you kill him.
That's so
hexed.
Bad. I don't know, man. Everything comes back to warlocks for me. Hopefully you're used to it at this point. But all in all, I think these classes are
great.
Great. And that makes everything else seem less great.
That's how you do a class with a companion pet thing.
Yeah. It just makes everything else seem less cool, you know? But maybe that's the curse of dragons. They're just cool as hell. So these had to be cool, you know? Oh, boy.
Yeah, I mean, it's Dungeons and Dragons, right?
It's the namesake, I suppose.
The dragon's gotta be cool.
It's gotta be cool. Where's my dragon warlock? Dragon patron? That doesn't exist yet.
We'll just get a whole book of dragons.
Book of dragons. There are some people that were shooting, you know, whatever that term is, and they were like, why isn't there a dragon patron for warlocks? And it's like, why would a dragon be a patron for anybody? What motive would they have? Yeah. So I was like, I get that.
Why would a kraken have a patron or patron? Whoa. If I'm your patron,
yeah.
What are you to me? What's that word?
Patronee?
Servant?
Signee?
I don't know.
So
why would a kraken have a
thrall?
Warlock?
I don't know. What's crack-a-lacking, I guess. I'm sorry. Kraken are bound.
But it's similar to the great old one. They might not even know they have a guy.
I guess.
Some of the great old one stuff, it says they might not even know you exist. You just have found their tome
Yeah. So I guess there's ways we could work around and figure it out. This is not a Warlock episode as much as I would love it to be. It's not.
Never will be.
So all in all, you like these?
Yeah, I love them.
So we got a surprise on Earth Arcana, and it turned out pretty well. Some of the wording, one sentence is messed up, but everything else is pretty solid.
I mean, I've been pretty on board with subclasses here in 2020. I'm going to be with you.
Like, you hate 100 with you. On Earth Arcana, man.
The classes, though, are crushing it lately.
Yeah. I mean,
compared to what we have, which is not great.
I don't think they will, but I hope they revamp old classes. Or at least continue to add things to them that make them cooler, like variant versions.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't they do a Beastmaster Unearthed Arcana? Yeah, they did a Ranger Revised.
And it wasn't that good. I remember the episode. I was at your house, and you were like, eh.
I mean, it addresses some of it.
Yeah, but it doesn't solve anything. Is it? Was that in the Tasha's thing?
We're not sure.
Let's see. Let's look. Well, we've got the thing here.
Well, it says, I'm saying, there's not a subclass, definitely, but it says
no.
Beastmaster Companions, page 61. Okay. That might address it. I'm not positive. Because so in that specific Unearthed Arcana, UA Revised Range, you guys can look it up, there's a Ranger Conclave, and one of them says Beast Conclave, and talks about Animal Companion. That was them trying to revise the Beastmaster, and it definitely hits some of the points that we are talking about, but this is definitely the best version of a pet.
So we don't have too much time left.
So maybe we'll cover this next episode. I don't know.
We will, but like spoilers for just a little bit right now in chapter 4, Dungeons and Masters tool that we see in the thing here. There are some of my favorite my favorite compound words ever. So, first of which, Supernatural Regents, under this subcategory is Far Realm.
Okay.
Love it. Mirror Zone.
Yeah, I think what we're going to do next episode, we're going to spend at least the majority, might do some waffling, but the majority
of what we think these are.
Yeah, talking about theorizing what these could be, what these subclasses are talking about, what these, you know, I'm excited to delve into them.
Two things take the cake. I'll give you a little teaser here. Under Magical Phenomenon, the first one in this is Eldritch Storms. And there's another one that's Mimic Colonies. That is terrifying.
I can't even imagine what these are, and I'm excited to brew some ideas with you next week.
It's a little teaser for you guys. Is it next week? No.
Well, no. We're going to brew the idea. We're going to think about it.
We're going to think about it.
We're going to chat about this Tale of Contents next week. And then the week after, Tasha's comes out. 17th of November. Check it out on D&D Beyond, or you can pick it up at Amazon or your LGS local game store.
Yep, comes out on the 17th. Just observe safety things in your area.
Mask up, baby, mask up. Sanitize your ass, your hands, everything.
Oh, man, is it really next week? What?
What's next week? What?
I'm going to be visiting Ryan.
Whoa.
And we may or may not be having our internal first session for our hopeful live D&D podcast that we're doing.
Yeah, that should be fun, man. Cool. I'm excited. I'm going to have to review my character. It's been a little bit.
But I've been working. I've been writing stuff. So, as usual, if you're interested in talking to us about things, speculating, seeing our opinions on stuff, you can always shoot us a message on Twitter and Instagram at DungeonCrawlPod. But you can also send us a more long-winded dissection of this episode or any of your choosing at thedungeoncrawlpod@gmail.com for business inquiries, what have you. There's a few other ways to get our attention, though, Ryan. What are those?
Yeah, I'm listening. First shout-out, though, I want to say, so we had an episode.
Said, fuck you.
We had an episode about Orion with a Frostmaiden. Remember that one?
Yeah, what about it?
Well, 6 days ago, D&D Beyond posted a how to play Uriel the Frostmaiden like a goddess of eternal winter, and I highly recommend everyone go check that out if you are.
Is that the literal title?
Yeah, that's how they're talking about how to run Uriel the Frostmaiden, how to run the quote unquote main villain of the campaign.
That's a title, man.
So definitely
titles.
Pull that up. if you're running that campaign and really embody. Damn. They had one for Strahd, I'm pretty sure, a long, long time ago. So definitely look those up. But yeah, make sure you guys go to Apple Podcasts. I keep saying iTunes. I'm kind of outdated on that, aren't I? iTunes.
Why? When did they change that?
Well, iTunes is still around, but...
Yeah, but Apple Music.
Yeah, but you don't need it anymore. You can...
I'm so confused.
Yeah, you got Apple Podcasts now. You got Apple Music. They've kind of moved away from the...
When you used to activate your iPhones through iTunes, and you can only change shit through iTunes, and if you bricked your phone, you had to get onto iTunes.
I am so glad iTunes is not, like, the only option you have now to put music on your phone, because that was so annoying back in the day.
Yeah, it was pretty bad.
Regardless, go to Apple Podcasts, type in The Dungeon Crawl, the podcast you're currently listening to. So you might actually be listening to us on that platform already. Go there, hit that 5 stars, write a review, tell us how much you love Braxton's hair.
Oh, thanks.
Write it. You love the luscious locks, the fiery atmosphere that it,
I almost burned it actually.
Yeah, it exudes from his hair. Write that into a review. It really helps out the podcast, can boost us up in the algorithm of people looking for podcasts, and can get more listeners tuning in. So I appreciate it, guys.
That's probably my favorite iTunes section that you've done so far.
Thanks, man.
That's a good one. Good job. There's also a Discord. It probably is in the description.
It is.
Somewhere.
It is.
Like chatting with us.
Yeah, we have a link tree. What do you call that thing?
Yeah, Linktree.
Yeah, Linktree. It's got our website, which is our Buzzsprout for right now, our Discord, as well as all our socials. Definitely click that in the link below.
Yeah, we talk about lots of stuff in the Discord. I've been playing Genshin Impact a lot, and some of us also play. There's also some other gacha gamers, other video games you want to talk about, whatever. We got some friends.
Whatever you want. A few of us.
Whatever you want. He's been Ryan.
He's been Braxton.
That is me, a little fancy this time. We've been The Dungeon Crawl, thank you for listening to us ramble on about these Dragon Boys.
Make sure you tune in next week for our theories
speculation.
And ideas before Tasha's comes out. We do have the leak of the table of contents. We'll be pouring over that next week.
Don't tell on us.
See you then.